class, as a special class, on how to make the most of your time at Mahon Meir. So the good news is that the hardest is always the beginning. And the first day is the hardest. So you're done with your first day. The first week is the hardest week. The second week is almost as hard. And after the first 2 weeks, you can start getting used to it. But the beginning is the most difficult. So hang in there. Take it easy. Don't be quick to decide. In the beginning, the first thing you notice are the things that you wish were different. And it takes time to see the beauty and all the good that's going on here. You've come to a place where, as you see, just going around the class, you have people from many different countries and people at many different ages and stages in life. And that makes it a unique environment and an environment which allows you to grow in ways that you probably haven't experienced before. A person might initially find it frustrating, but after a time you start seeing that there's a lot to learn and gain from the different vantage points that different people bring to the class. I personally am enriched every year by the different people who are in the class. It's that simple. If you're open, Chazal say, Mikol Milamda Hiskalti. I became smart because I was willing to learn from everyone. So we had a student here. Any of you remember Asher Chaim? Before all of your time. Okay. A student here was a botanist out in Ukraine. And he made a few comments as we were learning Nachmanides, the letter we'll be learning on Friday. And those comments are with me till today. My understanding of the book of Genesis is different ever since he was in the class. A botanist enriched us. We had a nuclear physicist who was sitting here in class for a year and a half, 2 years before all of your times. And also, his comments were enriching. Michael Arosh, you're still going to meet him. He's in charge of the web room. Thanks to him, he kept pushing. We have to learn Shmona Prakim, Maimonides' philosophical work introducing Pirkei Avot, and thanks to him, we learned that whole work together. So, my classes specifically are not set in stone. I'm waiting to hear from you after a few weeks that you're here. You'll guide me as to what you want to know. But in general, be open to the fact that the difference is there's what to gain from them. Make friendships with the Israelis. You'll gain from it. Your Hebrew will improve from it. One of the strengths of Mahon Meir is that you're thrown into Israel. When people ask me how this yeshiva compares with certain other yeshivot, so I think one of the strengths of Mahon Meir is the fact that you're not living in a bubble. Yes, this class is in English. You walk out to the hallway, you got to make do with your Hebrew. I know they're going to make do with their English, and they're going to think they know English so well, but force yourself to get some chavrutot and talk Hebrew and in the lunchroom and make friends and go out for Shabbos. And this way you will learn what being in Israel is all about. That's a positive, a plus of Mahon Meir. So there was once a man walking through the forest and he got lost. And he's walking and walking and walking and he can't find his way out. And it's getting nighttime, and he makes a little campfire and he makes himself something to eat. And in the morning he starts from scratch and he can't figure out where to go. And he's getting pretty frustrated because it seems like the forest will never end. And suddenly in the distance he sees a man. So he runs towards him and he's running through the thicket, he's running through the forest, and he's yelling at the man and the man doesn't seem to hear him. And finally he approaches close enough that the person sees him and turns around, and a smile breaks on the other person's face. So he's running towards him, and the other person starts running towards him, and they meet in the center, and they're huffing and puffing, and finally he says, you know, I'm lost in the forest. I was hoping you could tell me how to get out. And the other guy looks at him and says, well, I got good news and bad news. The bad news is that I'm lost too. But the good news is that I could tell you where not to go. So, I'm coming here, and I'm telling you where not to go. Meaning, after the experience of many students, Baruch Hashem, who have come through the halls of Mahon Meir, if we think about things now at the beginning of the year, so then we can try to avoid repeating other people's mistakes. So what are the biggest mistakes that people make in Mahon Meir? I can tell you there are two major mistakes people make in Mahon Meir, in many yeshivos. Number one, you guys listening closely, it's very simple. It's called sleep. Most people stay up late, they end up surfing the net, talking to friends, and it's easy to stay up at night. But then you pay the price the next morning. Learning Hebrew, learning Torah involves so much more concentration than anything else you've done. I just had Ben Azmanim. I was doing diapers, cleaning the house. I could run on 3 hours, 4 hours of sleep, no sweat. Now I'm back to yeshiva. I got to get my 6-7 hours of sleep. I'm not going to function as well. Torah takes more out of you than anything else you've ever done. You want to learn Torah, you want to grow, you need sleep. And so the first big mistake that most people make at Mechon Me'il is that they don't go to bed on time. And if you want to know the axis that your whole day revolves around, that's it. The time you go to sleep at night. So that's mistake number one. And I'm the big culprit because my class extends Thursday night till 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. But that's because we lead into Friday Shabbos. Friday morning class starts at 9. And then Shabbos, you guys can sleep all day Shabbos. Not all day, but you catch up on sleep Friday afternoon Shabbos. Okay, so that's mistake number one. What is mistake number two? Mistake number two that most people make at Mechon Me'il and in many other yeshivot is lack of self-appreciation. People keep thinking, oh, I should be doing this much and that much and I haven't accomplished and I don't know. And a person can be the most successful student here and still be beating at himself. We had a guy here who came in, what can I tell you? He came off of a rock and roll band. Father wasn't Jewish. He started from scratch and he was a genius. He still is a genius. He's still alive. And the guy was soaring. You're talking about from learning Aleph Beis to learning Gemara to boom, in 3 years he accomplished what other people don't do in 20 years. And I caught him at the end of 1 year, like the end of his second or third year. I caught him for a conversation. I asked him, what are you doing next year? So he said, I don't know, I'm considering going back to rock and roll, or I don't know what. So I said to him, don't you see what you've accomplished? So he said, what do you mean? So we sat down and we started looking at his accomplishments. And suddenly he realized he was a success story, and he still is. He is one of the success stories of Mechon Me'ir. But he and many other students were ready to drop out because they didn't see their own successes. And why don't people see their own successes? So there are many reasons. One is that we gauge ourselves against other people. He came to my house and he saw that my 5-year-old knew halachos that he doesn't know. Big deal. They grow up with it. He's starting from scratch. So my 9-year-old can quote the psukim that he hasn't yet seen and he knows by heart. So what? You can't compare yourself to the 9-year-old. Big deal. He goes to school where they teach him by heart. You have to see the amazing strengths which you have. Every person that makes it to Mechon Me'ir has contended with hardships, has crossed hurdles to get here. And your starting point is not the same as other people. So you have to see your successes. And you have to know that we don't have tests here for the most part. And the reason is because you cannot gauge personal growth on a test. How are you going to gauge that time that you knew a juicy story about someone and you were able to contain yourself, you didn't say it? That's tremendous. But you can't gauge that on a test. How are you going to gauge the time that you kept Shabbos and that first time that you shut your cell phone and you didn't SMS and you didn't talk to anyone and you didn't even take a peek to see who was SMSing you? There's no test that can gauge growth. So the guy next to you, great, so my son never thought of looking at his cell phone on Shabbos. Whoop-dee-doo. You can't gauge yourself next to him. You have to gauge yourself next to yourself. There's the famous story of Rav Zusha. You guys hear of Rav Zusha? One of the Hasidic rebbes was named Rav Zusha. And Rav Zusha used to say, if when I pass away, they take me in heaven and they ask me, why weren't you Maimonides? I'm not worried about it. I have an answer. I'm going to tell God, you didn't give me the tools. You gave Maimonides. I'm not worried they're going to ask me why I wasn't Maimonides. I don't have his intellect. I don't have his stamina. I don't have all the strengths you gave Maimonides, I don't have. If they ask me, why aren't you Rashi? So the great commentary, Rashi on the Torah, I don't have his strengths. I'm not worried they're going to ask me that. I'm going to tell them back, I have many excuses why I wasn't Rashi. My big worry is that when I get to heaven, they're going to ask you, why weren't you Zusha? Why weren't you yourself? Every one of us has unique potential. Every one of us has potential to uncover parts of Torah that no one else can uncover but us. Hashem made the Torah in a way that it is intimately intertwined with the Jewish people, and only we can unlock the secrets of the Torah. And every one of us has his area of Torah that he can unlock. As we learn more, as we grow, we gain access to greater knowledge and greater capacity to uncover secrets of the Torah that no one else can uncover. But that takes a certain persistence. And in order to have that persistence, we have to firstly be able to look at ourselves positively, to see our strengths, to look and say, wow, look, I've done something positive. And every one of us has this challenge. It's one of the great issues of our generation. We lack healthy self-esteem. We're talking about a healthy ego. So we have to be real about what we expect of ourselves. I sat with a student in a different yeshiva at the end of last semester. And he told me he's thinking of dropping out. I said, dropping out of what? He said, dropping out of Judaism. I said, why? He said, because I'm a failure, and I've tried so many times, I keep failing. So I said to him, okay, let's take a piece of paper, and on the top we're going to write one rule. The Talmud tells us a rule, "En HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba bitrunya im briyotav." God doesn't come to his creatures with unfair claims. God doesn't expect you to do what you can't do. He expects you to grow at a normal rate. That's the rule on top of the page. Now you fill out the page. What do you think God wants of you? So very often we have these dreams that are completely, completely irrelevant in reality. We have these dreams. I should be getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and learning, and I should be learning till 12 o'clock at night, and I should be able to go and know all of the halachos and keep all of the mitzvos, and even though I never ate kosher, now I should be eating kosher and happy about it. Oh, I got this phone call a few months ago. Person calls me up and says, Rabbi, my wife's upset at me. Why is she upset at you? Because I tell her it's hard for me not to eat pork. So I told him, go tell her it's hard for me not to eat pork too. Really, you're just saying that. I said, okay, so I'm just saying that, but that's because I never tasted pork. I'm sure if I would have tasted pork, I would have liked pork, and it would have been hard for me. Big deal. So I didn't taste it. I don't miss it. But there are many other mitzvot that I wish I could, I didn't have to do. Go tell her I said that I also have mitzvot that I'm not so happy with. I do them because God said so, but am I happy about it? No, I'm not on that level yet, so she shouldn't get so excited. So we sometimes expect of ourselves, we often expect of ourselves, things that are completely unrealistic. You can't just leap and switch 180 degrees and remain normal. So some people say, okay, I'm doing it anyways. And then one of two things happen. Either they flip out, or they just flip back. Meaning it doesn't last. Growth has to be incremental. You start getting into one habit and slowly you get into the next one. And that's another mistake people make. They try to zoom forward. And then they find themselves frustrated and dropping out. One of the strengths of Mahon Meir is that our goal is to have balanced growth. Balanced growth. We're not looking for you to shoot ahead. One step after the other. So you'll find that I'm usually the one who puts the brakes all the time. Don't worry about that, and don't worry about that. You still have time before you adopt that. Slowly, because slow and steady wins the race. What's the greatness of someone who leaps forward and then leaps back? Big deal. That's not what it's all about. And God doesn't expect that of us. You know the Rebbe of Chabad. You guys heard of the Rebbe of Lubavitch? So he said a very nice proof to this idea. He said, if God wanted us to accomplish the whole Torah, and held us accountable to accomplish every nuance of the Torah, the first second that we could, so the first second that a person became bar mitzvah, or the first second that a person did gyur, so then it doesn't work, it doesn't add up. Because when a child becomes bar mitzvah, there is no way in which he could know the whole Torah. So then God should have only made him accountable at age 25, 35, 45. What are you making him accountable for the Torah at age 13? There's no way he could do the whole Torah. What do you see? That God wants you to do the best that you normally can. A person comes to do gear. He's coming to convert to Judaism. Do we force him to go take classes for 30 years, study and know all the halachos, and then go do gear? No. We tell them, get a basic grasp of what the Torah wants from you, what Jewish philosophy is, what Jewish halach is, what's a Shabbos, what's kosher. You have a basic grasp? Okay, now we do here. Now keep learning. But that means that his first Shabbos isn't going to be perfect. So why'd you do Gior? Isn't that unfair? The answer is God doesn't hold that against him. God doesn't expect us to accomplish in one day. God expects us to grow incrementally, intelligently, in a balanced way. So how do you gauge it? Do you guys ever ride a bike? You know how to ride a bike with speeds.
Sure.
You ever drive a car with gears?
Yep.
No, but it's almost like riding a bike with gears, okay? It's the same idea. You're pushing the pedal, and the car goes, and suddenly you're going, so you know when you're riding a bike? So if you're pedaling too fast and you're moving too little, like you're on straight ground and you're on speed one, right? So you know you gotta shift up, right? Gotta accomplish more ground. You don't want to just turn your feet and not move too much. You're going uphill, so then you low down the speeds, right? So that you can deal with the difficulties. So life is like that too. How do you know how much you should be working? It's like the engine. If the motor's making too much noise, if it's like, so you know you're doing too much. Go easy. You want the motor of Jewish growth, to be puttering along at a healthy noise. That it's working, you're accomplishing, you're moving forward, but you're not going crazy. It's not the motor going and heating and overheating, and that's not going to get us anywhere. So we always say, your growth has to be in accordance with what you're prepared for. Are you prepared to keep Shabbos with a smile on your face? Are you prepared to keep kosher with a smile on your face? Start with that. Then you come and you tell me, well, I heard there are some people who say you shouldn't eat Rabbanut, you should only eat Badatz. I say, okay, there are many people in the world. Anything that's Orthodox and kosher, eat. But Rabbi, shouldn't I be more stringent? No. Why not? Because I said so. Why did I say so? Because you're not going to accomplish anything by it. Begin by keeping Shabbos, basic. But I heard there's this stringency about that. I shouldn't even take a cold shower on Shabbos. Okay, you didn't hear it from me. Very often people come to me and tell me, I heard that. I say, you didn't hear it from me, because I'm not about to tell you that. So what? So there are a million stringencies in the book. Who's looking for stringencies? Let's begin by learning basic halacha. What am I supposed to do? Let's begin by being happy with what we do. As we grow slowly, we will accomplish. And we will accomplish things that we'll be able to hold on to. I don't think I've ever regretted a person growing too slowly. Nothing wrong, so it'll take him another few months till he keeps the next mitzvah. But there's something very wrong with a person growing too quickly. And then things start falling apart, or people have nervous breakdowns, or they say, I can't hack this. So the trick isn't, remember, this is long term. We're building life here. We're looking to build something that's going to be with us for life. It's no great shakes to be able to accomplish for a week or a month. We want to go long term. So let's build slowly. Questions so far? I have a question, Stefan, before your question, okay? I'm sorry, I just want to, I have one very important question. Are there any waivers?
No,
that's what I thought. Okay, so, Stefan, help us out here. We got vanilla or lemon?
Which one are we opening?
Vanilla.
Okay. We had a student come in from Oregon, and he said that one of the things that drew him to Machon Meir was that on the recordings of Thursday night, he'd hear how we were giving out pizza. So, that's why I leave the recording on when we're giving out wafers. These are delicious Israeli wafers. Oh boy, you hear that? Okay, you're listening. Make up as long as you can only say amen. Amen. Gentlemen's for everyone. We're listening.
I know, I'm sorry first of all for calling into the class.
Say that.
But I picked up that.
Oh, wait. If I could just interrupt you for 1 second. I have a rule in all of my classes. You're always invited to walk in late. You're always invited to leave early. I always say better you learn 5 minutes than not learn at all. If a guy says, I didn't walk in because I was late and then I'd have to leave early, I say, dunce, walk in, get those 5 minutes of learning. Don't tell me I didn't walk in because I don't care. Walk in late, leave early. We all have, but obviously it's nice if you walk in on time. So don't get me wrong. But there's nothing wrong with walking in late or leaving early. I know everyone has whatever they have to do. Yeah.
So I picked up kind of that it was about stringencies and keep doing the methods of smiles and whatever. But I have a question. I've heard a few explanations about it. I think it was in Nassau's workshop about where it says that you cannot eat, where it says you cannot boil a kid in his mother's milk.
Yeah.
And, oh, you're listening. I thought you were asking me. So, and I also heard that it's been repeated in the Torah 3 times. But which, in a sense, told me that it's very important. But I don't understand where it gets to that you come to a point. I understand it comes from sort of a fact, but where you get to a point where you can't even have the same things in the same pots, where it's a total separation in your kitchen. So it's not that I don't keep it. Of course I keep it, but there's a I don't understand it. I don't understand the whole story.
Okay, so there are two questions. One is the question of what does Judaism say? And the other is the question, how'd you get that? Where'd that come from? Now, that's all legitimate. But you understand it's going to take a little bit of time to explain that. And if you really want to understand it, it's going to take a lot of time to explain it. As in taking Talmud for 2 or 3 years and then. Now, I will be happy to address it on the level where we can understand it without 1,000 introductions. But that's on Thursday night. On Thursday night, we have open session where you could ask whatever you want. And then if you remind me, we'll come back to this point, okay? To whatever extent we can. Yes?
So you had said just before, you asked if you have any questions, if that you're, it's not healthy to, it's more healthy to kind of go slow and steady in your growth. And you know, if things start going too fast, if the gears start getting, you know, too heated, to kind of take it down, but still, I guess, progress forward. How do you know when it's then time to actually kind of take on another step or you know, like take it a step forward?
So the rule is, first of all, once it gets easy, like riding a bike, when you feel you're pedaling, it's like second nature, it's easy. And secondly, when it feels easy and happy to take on the next thing. Meaning you want to take on the next thing, even if it might be difficult, but when you're at a point where you could be happy with it. If you're at a point where it's frustrating and it's tiring and it's like, you get up in the morning and it's like, I don't feel like putting on tefillin, I don't feel like davening 3 times a day. I remember we had a student here 2-3 years ago. It was Yom Kippur night, the holiest night of the year. We just finished the Maariv prayer. And he walks over to me and says, Rabbi, all the best. I said, where are you going? He said, I'm catching a taxi to Tel Aviv. I said, why? He said, because there are no buses, Rabbi. And this is out loud in front of the whole Beis Medrash. So, I stood there. It took me a second to realize he wasn't joking. So what did I say? Have a safe trip. You know, that's where he was holding. He walked into here from wherever he walked in. And at that stage of his life, Maariv on Yom Kippur was what he could handle. After that, I don't know what he was doing in Tel Aviv, but he wasn't sticking around here. That's legitimate. It's legitimate because growth takes time. You can't do things in 1 second and expect it to work. So a few months later, he started keeping Shabbat a little bit more, and a few months later a little bit more, but that makes sense. You can't work it any other way. So the fact that, you know, when I heard it, and I'm at Machon Meir for the better part of a decade, but I wasn't ready for that one, Yom Kippur night. That's not exactly what you're ready to hear. But fine, so that's my problem. But he's 100%. Slowly. No. Okay. Make sense? Okay. Now I'm going to tell you a secret. Don't use it on me. But there's a secret you guys should know. And that is that you should be taking advantage of the rabbis. Don't tell them I said it. But you should. Did you hear of Rav Mordechai Eliyahu? So, there was a big rabbi who lived in the neighborhood. I don't remember if it's a year or 2 years now. I used to take out the garbage when I'd walk by their house. I come to ask a question, then I take out the garbage. But by being in the house and taking out the garbage, they start to know me, and I start to know them, and I gained a lot from that relationship. There are all kinds of things. I bought a car. In order to have a car on the Lower East Side, to be able to take Rabbi Feinstein when he needed to go places, and I learned a tremendous amount from that. I used to drive up to Muncie to drive Rav Pesen Zatzal, another Rebbe of mine, and through that I learned things. You have to find angles. I used to walk home. There was a rabbi here in Shaarei Chesed, an old Yemenite rabbi. I used to go to his classes, I don't remember what night of the week, this goes back a decade and a half ago, but after the class I'd walk him home and ask him questions the whole way home. I learned a lot from that. And so on and so forth. If you try, you will find angles to take advantage. Take advantage. That's what the rabbis are here for. Not only in class, after class. Find opportunities. It's up to you, but don't just be happy sitting here. You finish class, you go over and ask him, Rabbi, when can I come over to you for a Shabbos meal? Could you help set me up for a Shabbos meal? Take advantage. You have Rav Listman here, ask him, Rabbi, I heard you live out in Givat Asaf. When would it work for you if I could come for a Shabbos? You go to him, you got a whole Shabbos in there. Guys, push a little bit. I came to one of the greatest yeshivos in the U.S. And my brother told me a trick, which won't work on me, guys, so don't bother trying. But it'll work probably on almost every other rabbi here. It won't work on me because so many guys have done it on me already that I'm all finished. But my brother told me the following trick. He said, go to the Rosh Yeshiva and tell him you want to learn with him one-on-one. So I said, me? I'm the first guy. I'm in the lowest class. I'm going to go to the Rosh Yeshiva? He said, yeah, try. And if he tells you I don't have time, tell him once a week for 15 minutes. And then go to the next Rosh Yeshiva and ask him for once a week. And if you can't get once a week, it's once every other week or once a month. I had a chavrusa with the Rosh Yeshiva once a week, every Friday afternoon. I had a chavrusa in that yeshiva. I was in Mir, I was learning chavrusa with the Rosh Yeshiva. I was in Telz, I was learning chavrusa with the Rosh Yeshiva. I was in MTJ, I was learning chavrusa with the top dayan in the yeshiva. Not because I was top, but because my brother told me, go forward and ask. I said, but how could I? He said, that's what everyone else is saying, so you could do it. So the only reason I'm telling you I can't is because there are so many guys who have used this trick on me that I'm all finished out. Like all my free minutes are, I can't. I have chavrutot with I don't know how many people. 5 minutes here and 5 minutes there. I don't have another 5 minutes. But try it on the other rabbis. You go over to your rabbi, whoever your Gemara teacher is, and ask him, when can I learn with you 10 minutes? What happens if I show up Matzei Shabbos? What happens if I meet you in Mincha and Ma'ariv on Shabbos? Or on Friday, if we could come to shul 10 minutes earlier? Or Friday morning after davening? You'll get your own personal time with him. Learn with him. In almost every yeshiva I was in, you could drive with Rav Bigon too. You know how many guys have chavrusa with Rav Bigon? So maybe your Hebrew isn't up to par, so get Rav Listman. Take advantage of the rabbis. Friends. Ooh, you came in at the right word. There are wafers back there. I think there are still wafers back there.
There are still wafers.
Okay. So one of the assets you could take with you from the yeshiva is the friendships you could forge here. But that's up to you. I recommend you have time off every other Thursday afternoon. You have time off Friday afternoon. Get together, play frisbee, football, soccer, basketball. On soccer is only a 15-minute walk from here. There's a ping pong table out there. It's not a big deal, but you guys should get together and do this stuff. We used to have a soccer team here. We played the other, the English department against the French and the Spanish department. Don't ask me who won. Of course we won. I don't know. If I'm making it up, I could say whoever won. It doesn't matter, but it doesn't matter. But the idea is, do stuff together. You're going to have, in 1 month, in 5 weeks from now, you're going to have a 3-week break. Plan hikes together. Do stuff together, 5 weeks from now, yeah. This month is 5 weeks long. 40 days.
That's, how many weeks?
You have 3 weeks off. Till the 10th of Tishrei, which is 40 days from now. And then you have 20 days off. So, try to invest in the friendships. You guys should all friend one another on Facebook if you're on there. You could friend me too, but I'm saying you should start building your lives together. there's a story. They used to come collecting in Europe for people to fund the development of Zion. So there was one collector who came and he spoke about how great Israel is and the air is pure and the people are nice. And he's going on and finally he said, and the streets are paved with gems. So there was a rabbi there who helped him get donations. And then after that collector left, a few years later, the rabbi was still inspired by his speeches. And he made Aliyah and he went to live in Tzfat. And he's living in Tzfat and one day he bumps into that collector. So he tells him, you know, your stories were so moving. In the end, they inspired me. I came here. And everything you said is true. Except, I don't see the streets paved with gems. So the collector looked at him and he said, you don't see the streets paved with gems? Then I guess you don't see the streets paved with gems. Maybe one day you'll merit. And walked away. So he was a big Hasidic Rebbe, and he stopped, and he thought, and he said to himself, he's a charlatan, but he has a point. And so he went back home, and he went into his room, and he gave instructions not to be bothered, just food should be brought, and he stayed in his room for a few weeks, working on himself, purifying himself, elevating himself. And when he walked out, he said, boy, that collector was so right. Now I see the gems in the street. You came to Israel. You came to Machon Meir. So the question is, what do you look at? You can look at the rooms and say, they expect me to live in this? Would I look like a sardine? That's, 8 people in a room? I thought those days were over. And you could look at Machon Meir and say, these people eat with their hands. There isn't even a serving spoon in the main dish. And if there is, someone's using it in their own plate. You could come to Machon Meir and look at a lot of things like that. You guys didn't get that yet, did you? You'll see. You could look at a lot of things and say, how come every time I'm eating, I suddenly get an arm going across my face like that? I haven't been elbowed like that since I was fighting in high school. How come? Right? You could look at that. It exists. No one's going to say it doesn't exist. But the question is, what do you look at? Because there are a lot of beautiful things. And when you make Aliyah, you have a choice what you're going to look at. You're going to contend with hardships. And you're also going to have beautiful things in your life. And then the question is, what do you look at? There was once a child who was shown a cup. And they asked him, is the cup half full or half empty? So the kid looks at the cup. And he says, isn't that a funny question? He takes the cup, takes a smaller cup, pours it in, and he says, now it's full. Now you don't have any questions, right? So the question is which cup you're using. If you're using the wrong cup, if your expectations are high up there, and then you say, gee, what did I come to? But if you're willing to look at what you really have, I used to learn in Merkaz Arab. You go down the block, make a right turn at the light, you'll see on your left-hand side of yeshiva. And when I came, so I was the here's a new term, you guys probably never heard of this before, I was the dumb American. You guys, you'll hear this term, okay? So they tell me the dorm is full. Here's the room we have for you. I didn't know that they're putting me on the top floor, corner room, furthest room from the base medrash, the room that has the sun baking it all day long. So you never want to go to your room because it's very far from the base medrash. You got to climb 5 floors, no elevator. And this is a room where, what can I tell you? You sit there by day, and any time during the day, you don't need to turn on, you want to heat up your water or anything. This was a sauna. So I'd wake up every morning and look out the window and see the Jerusalem skyline. I was on the top floor, right? And ask myself, is this for real? I'm in Jerusalem. Wait a second, is this real? I didn't notice till years later what this dumb American got. I didn't notice this, but that's because I was looking at something else. I had spent years dreaming of coming here, and I just couldn't believe I was here. I remember the first time I turned on a radio, and I heard Hebrew. And I looked at the radio incredulously, and I said, wow, turned it off, turned it on. They're still talking Hebrew. Turned it off, turned it on. I sat there for like 5 minutes just turning it off and on. I couldn't believe they're talking Hebrew. We used to live when we, that's how I got the Machon Meir. When we first got married, we'd live around the corner down there, right next to the kids' school, Noam. And I remember the first time I left the house in the morning and I saw Jewish children walking down the street talking Hebrew. I just stopped. I just looked. Wait a second. The prophet Zechariah says there are going to be little children walking in Jerusalem talking Hebrew. This is happening before my eyes. I couldn't keep walking. I ran back home. I said to my wife, you know what I just saw? She said to me, what did you just see? I said, there are little boys and little girls walking to school talking Hebrew. And she looks at me, she grew up here, and she says, right? I said, yeah, that's amazing. What time is it? I'm only leaving at this time. For like 2 months, I'd gauge my time to leave so I could see those little children walking, talking Hebrew. So you could miss all of that. You could be here and you could be focused on the tss and the sardines, or you could stop and say, wait a second, this is beautiful. Look at where I am. Look at what I'm doing. Now, if you think about it, you have entered quite possibly the greatest potential in your lives and the greatest difficulties in your lives. Because it's easy, relatively easy, to master something that's external to ourselves. The Mishnah says, Eizu Gibol, who is a mighty person, HaKovesh Et Yitzo, one who captures himself. In high school, I had a high school friend who tried to commit suicide. I don't know if he really tried to commit suicide. When a guy takes a plastic knife to his veins, you sort of tell yourself, he didn't really mean to commit suicide, right? But he had a problem, right? So after sitting with a psychologist and sitting with a psychiatrist, he came back to school after his first or second attempt at suicide. And we sat down to talk. So he said to me a very interesting line. He said, you know, if a person has an illness, they could fight it. A person knows they have a certain illness, so they're fighting that illness. He has diabetes, he has to deal with his sugar. He has high cholesterol, he deals with his cholesterol. But when a person has a psychological difficulty, he's dealing with himself. What am I going to do with myself? Who am I fighting? It's me against me. Well, that's what the Mishnah is telling us. Eizeu Gibo, you want to know what takes real might? HaKovesh Yitzro, conquer yourself. To conquer a city, that takes external might. To conquer your neighbor, that takes external might. Conquering yourself, that takes internal might. That's a totally different plane. And so the realm that you're entering when you enter Machon Meir is the realm of true strength and true character. And those who invest the time walk away rewarded, walk away conquering themselves. And again, it's not a formula. Don't compare yourself to your neighbor. You don't know what they're going through. You don't know where they came from. I remember I had a roommate. I'd very often be frustrated that I didn't accomplish more in my learning. And he'd tell me, Rabbi Akiva started at age 40, right? He started his Aleph Beis. When did you start? So you're all 3 years old. Guys, how old are you? 1 year old, 2 year old. You're doing pretty good for a 2 year old. Don't gauge yourself against other guys your age. How many years have you been at this? 1 year, 2 years, 3 years? Anyone here been doing this more than 3 years? No. So you're all doing great for a three-year-old. Okay, that's how you have to look at it. You can't look at it and say, well, the other guy or his kid or what. No, what do you want? They're way ahead of you. You want a real gauge? You have all of 2 years, 3 years? No, you're doing very good for where you're at. That's the real gauge. But it's hard. It's not easy. But you know what? I always say this, and I mean it. When I walk into a classroom and the students stand up, I'm embarrassed. Because I had it easy. I was born to an Orthodox family. I did the regular Orthodox run, went to high school, went to yeshiva, finished yeshiva, got married, learned a little more, started teaching. Okay, very nice. Not too impressive. But any guy that walks through the doors of Machon Meir, they started somewhere else in life. They didn't run that run-of-the-mill course. They started somewhere else and they made a change. They made a move that takes real character. And that's how you guys have to view yourself. You have to say, wait a second, you can't compare me with him or the other guy. It's not only about information. And that's why we don't have tests at Machon Meir. The first few years I was here, I was very frustrated. I had this conversation with Rav Bigun a few times until I understood how brilliant it was. I kept asking him, why don't we have tests? Make a curriculum, make tests, let guys know when they finished accomplishing something. He said, no, you can't test, because it's not about this piece of information or that piece of information. A person's building his whole character at Machon Meir. But you have to give yourself credit. You have to see what your accomplishments are. And your first great accomplishment is the fact that you're here. That's not easy. Coming here is not easy. And so I think we have to have mutual respect. One of the things I ask, and people don't usually listen to me, but I'll ask anyways, is that you shouldn't look over your friend's shoulder. I mean, even if you think he's doing something wrong, it's none of your business. Every person has to grow at their pace. We had a student here, big hulk of a guy. Okay, imagine a guy who's almost about a foot from the ceiling. Talking about 6'5", 6'6", broad like this, a Marine, you know, big guy. And he got very into the learning, and he'd wake up at 4 o'clock every morning, work out, run all of Jerusalem, up steps, down steps, carrying books and bags of water and everything, just, you know. And then at 5 o'clock in the morning, he'd come, run into the shower, take his shower and go out and daven, and then learn, packing a whole day's worth of learning. Fine. So, big tzaddik, you know, the guy would really plug at it. He didn't know that it says in the Torah that you're not allowed to shave with a razor. So every morning after his jog, getting ready for davening, and this is the guy who'd stand there with his tefillin, and he'd think, and he'd focus, and always have a few coins to put in tzedakah as he's davening. So every morning as he's standing in the shower, he'd shave with the razor. No one saw it, because, you know, no one else was up at that hour. One morning, someone else got up at that hour. So he sees him going into the shower, and spraying on all the foam, and taking out his razor, and he looks at him, and he says to him, "You fake! You worthless fake you. You're playing it pious in front of everyone and now I see what you're really worth." He looks at me, he didn't know what hit him. He looks at me, he says, "What do you want? You faker." And he looks at him. Are you normal? What do you want from me? What did I do? He had no clue. He didn't know. He never learned that there's a mitzvah. You're not allowed to shave with a razor. But you can imagine how hurt he was. And the other guy, oh, he thought he was being so pious. Let's give each one our breathing room. Every person has to grow at their pace. No one can grow with someone else breathing down their shoulder. So you think that he should be doing something this way or that way. Either you're right or you're wrong. It doesn't really matter. Let him grow at his pace. There's one more point which we'll be discussing at greater length in the next class, and that is families. A lot of our learning is informational, and Judaism is about life. It's not just this piece of information or that piece of information. And imagine you were given the task. You guys heard of curiosity? You've heard of curiosity, right? That little machine that they just sent out to Mars. You heard Obama said, "I want to know if you found Martians," yeah? You guys know that, yeah? Okay, so... what? So there's this... what do they call it? So they have this machine that's searching out Mars called Curiosity. Now imagine you were riding on Curiosity and you met the first Martian. And the Martian meets you and says, "Stefan, tell me, what's Earth like? What's a human being like?" So you're texting back and forth. Yeah, text messages. So what are you going to say? A human being has hair, a human being has a nose, a human being has ears. What are you going to say? Where are you going to start? Everything you're going to do is external. It has nothing to do with what a human being is. How do you describe what a human being is? Go tell a Martian what a human being is. And the same thing about Judaism and Jewish life. You're going to learn, I hope, much more from osmosis, from just being with other people, going to families, than you will from the books. You have to read the books, you have to learn, but you also have to take time when you have Shabbosos off, go visit families, go see the way a Shabbos table is supposed to look. Listen and learn the songs of a Shabbos table. Learn how a couple relates to one another. Learn how we deal with the children, how we deal with the problems that arise in the home. And one of the keys to attaining that is to become a part of a family. So there are two ways you could become a part of the family. One is, we had a student here who used to do this. Come Friday night, he decided which family he wanted to become a part of. So he'd gauge when they'd come home from shul, wait about 30 seconds. He did it much harder. He'd go banging on that door, and they just couldn't have their meal. You know, you have a madman banging out your door, you know. So he got in. He got in once, he got in twice, he got in thrice. Okay, fine. There's another way. You could be a decent human being, and you could call up on Tuesday or Wednesday and say, hi, I was wondering if you have place for a meal. Give them forewarning. You know, they have to gauge how much chicken they're buying for Shabbos, what they're buying for Shabbos. People like to know in advance. Don't wake up like most yeshiva guys do. I was guilty of this at your age too. Once upon a time I was your age too. Don't wake up on Thursday and Friday. Call up on Wednesday. Ask the madrich to set you up on Wednesday. And secondly, there are two types of people who want to become part of the family. There are those who want to become part of the family, so when they show up, they say, hey, do you have some of that hummus I like? And what about that gin you brought out last time? And they're about taking. That's why I'm part of the family. Do you mind if I borrow your iPhone for a week? I'm going out to the Golan. I'll try to make sure it doesn't fall into the water. No, so that's not being a part of a family. You want to be a part of a family? It's about giving. It's about showing up beforehand and helping out. It's about staying afterwards to help out. It's, you want to be a part? Being a part is about giving. That's what being a part is. It's cleaning off the table afterwards. It's sweeping afterwards. If you can afford it, it's bringing something before Shabbos. It doesn't have to be big. It's calling up after Shabbos and saying thank you very much. You want to be a part of a family? Being a part of a family is a part of giving, not taking. You'll get from it. Believe me, those who end up being a part of a family end up having a family for life. And then you end up benefiting because you will learn much more than we can teach you in the class. And what?
Just to help this family ask why you were, didn't come last week.
The pasuk says in Proverbs, Hokal raglecha mi beit re'echa. Make your feet cherished in the house of your friend. Penis ba'acha, lest he be satiated with you, usne'eka, and hate you. So it's always better to have them asking for more than them saying enough. So it's very good if they ask, why didn't you come last Shabbos? But don't infer from that that you should come every week. No. It's like I used to be a magician. I'll tell you guys about that. We had a rule. Always leave when the crowd still wants more. Never stay on stage till they've had enough. You always have to leave when they're still saying more and more. Okay, any questions? Okay, so we're going to take